This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Gamefly's not-so-scary end-of-the-world PC sale, where the only thing you need to worry about is saving your hard-earned cash. Go to www.gamefly.com/download-games to see what's on sale today.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
All right, everybody, buckle up. We are in for an excellent Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee. Great to be here and very happy to be surrounded by Jays, although I'm not in Washington or Colorado. That would be Jeff, and John Kiefer all the way from sunny Florida.
Yep, and it was interesting coming in through. I thought it was going to be sunny California and came in through that cloud layer, and it's just overcast as...
It's pretty gloomy out here today.
Yeah.
The weather has turned very poor. Very poor.
Mm. Well, for this area, it's poor. I mean, half the people are under snow. We have nothing to complain about.
Yeah, this is SoCal winter.
Yeah.
Dude, it's like 67 degrees out there.
I know. I have to wear long sleeves.
Yeah.
Now I'm flashing back to that great classic Christmas movie, Holiday Inn. Snow. You know the song? You know Holiday Inn? You don't know Holiday Inn?
I do know it. I just don't. I mean, it's what?
He doesn't know it.
It's a classic,
It's a classic, like a 50s classic music.
Fred Astaire?
Of course.
Yeah.
Singing, and there's this crazy, ridiculous snow song, and anyway.
Baby, it's cold outside.
It's about a hotel.
Yes, it is about a hotel. You are correct.
I've seen it.
It is about a hotel.
Yes, it is.
And generals coming back from the war, and anyway. But even better, coming back from the war, well, I don't know, coming back from World War II was probably a pretty big thing. We have Brooklyn back running the boards for us today.
Yay! She's back from World War Seattle.
World War Portland.
Portland, yeah.
World War Portland.
That's right.
So hopefully we'll be getting to see more of her. It's great to have her here. Thanks. Glad to see you.
So awesome to have her back. You'll notice the show running much smoother. No, I'm just kidding.
don't jinx it. All right, so we have a ton to go through. I've actually gotten some time to play some games. Jeff's been playing games. John has a whole bunch of stuff because it's been a while since he has been out here and been on, and he will try not to regale us too much with his PC superiority complex.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. That was fun. I'm a PC elitist.
It's all right. Everyone needs to be elitist for something.
Hey, I'm honest. I suck at controllers. What do you want?
I'm a scotch and tequila elitist, so you're going to be a PC elitist.
So,
yeah.
And Jeff, what have you been playing?
Well, I finally checked out some Far Cry 3 multiplayer.
Multiplayer? There's multiplayer in that game.
Well, and it's we'll get to it, but it's good, but it's still a good enough game without the multiplayer to, multiplayer's a nice addition. How's that? So it's still a great game.
Is it forced?
It's really robust and it's actually pretty cool. But I as good as the single player was, I was just like, okay, why? Just give
Wait,
me more.
What exactly
single player.
Do you mean by robust? I mean, you say robust, and I think of like spaghetti sauce.
Okay, so robust means there are a lot of modes, a lot of things. So there's a co-op mode, which is a whole separate campaign from the main game. It's four player co-op.
When you say co-op, I think of spaghetti sauce.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Now I have this picture of you like in Lady and the Tramp and like a single piece of spaghetti and you're like pulling together with your girl.
That's the only
Here's
co-op
the
spaghetti I know of.
Do we count co-op as...
Multiplayer?
It is multiplayer, but I think oftentimes when we talk about multiplayer, we're thinking specifically competitive. At least traditionally we have.
Yes.
I always just, differentiate.
You lump them together.
Well, no, I say competitive or cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
Multiplayer.
Yeah.
It's just... But there's an important distinction.
Huge distinction, especially if they did a whole separate campaign just for co-op.
But it's like Borderlands doesn't have any, multiplayer in that sense either. But it's
well, Borderlands is barrierless. But it's not a different campaign. It's just drop in and drop out. You're playing the same thing,
right? But I mean,
it's a multiplayer game.
You're playing with each other. You are not shooting other humans in the face,
right?
So that I don't know. Anyway, so
I didn't mean to derail you. What I meant to actually get to is like. As huge as Far Cry 3 is, I'm shocked that it's not co-op that it's a separate, a whole other thing to do.
Well, and that's my biggest sort of...
That's nuts.
God, I wish they had figured out a way to, use the same two islands that you use for single player, but to even to make a co-op storyline on those islands would have been great. This other co-op storyline that they've included is basically a separate island from the other two, and it's fairly short. It's not very well balanced. So, for example, it's balanced for four players. So if you're playing with two players, you're going to get, you know, a lot of it is here's this location, and we're just going to throw like 300 dudes at you in waves, and you're going to, you know, take them all out and stuff. And then they'll punctuate it with a mini game based level, like, okay, now you're all on ATVs in sort of an enclosed arena area, and we're going to see who can grab C4 packets and drop them off at this barrier, you know, who can do that the most in a certain amount of time. So it's like it breaks up the action, but it's not really.
Sounds like Far Cry 6 Flags.
Yeah, it kind of is, but it's not quite as exciting as that. Like, I would have loved to been able to, like, you know, utilize all of the cool stuff. They're, like, for example, co-op doesn't really have any of the vehicles from single player. It's got some, you know, like a raft you get on with the other players, and it's kind of an automated, like, you know, you're shooting stuff while you're going on the raft, but you're not actually driving around and stuff like that. So there are some missed opportunities, I think. It's solid, but when you compare it to the single player, you're like, why didn't you leverage all this really rad stuff that you threw into the campaign and, you know, let me do it with my friends? Or, and that's just co-op. Now the multiplayer stuff, there's, like, you know, team deathmatch standard, and then they've got a couple of domination type modes, which are basically like one of them is based on radio transmitters that pop up in the environment, and you basically try to hold those points, and then one transmitter will disappear and another one will appear somewhere else, and so it's constantly moving people around the map. That's pretty fun.
Pretty classic Call of Duty mode.
Pretty classic, yeah. The coolest mode of the multiplayer competitive stuff, I thought, was a mode called Firestorm, which is basically same type of thing. You have, you know, two teams. Each team has two fuel dumps that they're trying to guard while simultaneously trying to light the fuel dumps of their opponents. And if you light your opponent's fuel dumps within a few seconds of, or within a certain time limit of each other, it sets the whole map on fire. And then there's a radio tower in this, so it changes all the pathfinding because you can't run through certain areas because they're on fire. And it funnels everybody to the center of the map where there's a radio that you have to control for a certain amount of time to win the match.
Is that the mode where the winning team or the best winning player gets to choose the punishment for the losing player?
That is all of the competitive modes. So that was kind of cool, although it's definitely like for the less mature, it's basically online bullying that's sort of sanctioned in this little. So you beat a match and the winning player or the best player on the winning team,
the Boston teabagging party,
gets to decide what to do with the best member of the losing team. So it's
the
like
the best member of the losing team.
Yeah. So it's like, ooh, it's like all the dudes on the winning team surrounding the dude on the losing team who's like tied up or whatever. And you can either let him go or, you know, do some humiliating thing where you give him a titty twister or, you know, kick him in the balls or whatever.
I don't know what I think about that. It's kind of hilarious, but it's also kind of, you know, it potentially fostering the wrong sort of online interaction.
It was both parts like charming and snarky. So it was like, I enjoyed it, but I realized, I mean, that was my reaction to it too. I was like, oh, this doesn't encourage.
It doesn't sound quite as bad though as the put a hit out on your friends fiasco that Square Enix did.
Oh, for Hitman?
Yeah, for Hitman.
God. Yeah.
What's that? I missed that.
You missed that? Oh my gosh. There was a website that they put up to promote Hitman Absolution, mm-hmm. and they did it on Facebook, and they said, here, put out a hit on your friends. And as some of the signifying, you know, things that they had to identify your friends, small breasts, tacky hair, big nose.
What?
Yeah, it was crazy. And
kind of bizarre.
Well, you could even put out hits on people that weren't involved in this whole Hitman hit mini or metagame or whatever. So you'd get a wall post on Facebook that was like, you know, really insulting and really like bullying. And you're like, what the fuck is this Hitman? Like, so-and-so put a hit out on me?
And it was down within an hour of it going up. But it was, yeah, it was pretty bad.
That is so indicative of something ill conceived.
How do you not have the foresight to see that'll be problematic? How do you not go, hey, guy who's pitching that idea?
Yeah, not so good.
We're going to have some issues with that.
Oh, and the interesting part about it is that the company that came up with this promotion for Square Enix has won an Emmy.
Really?
Yeah.
They give those out like popcorn.
So wow. it was just really.
So how did you get into co-op on Far Cry anyway? Was it just something you wanted to try, or did you decide that you were going to do it to talk about on the show?
Well, I was doing it for the review as well.
Okay.
But I mean, that was the primary thing. But yeah, I'm always interested in checking out co-op.
If you were just on your own, would you have played it more than just the first time you dropped into it? How much would you have played it other than that?
You know, the answer is probably no, but it's because if I'd given the choice of playing that and playing through the single player again, I'd much rather play through the single player again. It's just there's so much more to do and it's so much more fun. It does feel like a distraction. I mean, the multiplayer does feel like hey, here's some extra stuff if you want to, you know, get in there and horse around. And they're maybe as fully realized as most multiplayer modes. It's not going to pull anybody away from, you know, Call of Duty or Halo or any of that stuff. It's like it's a novelty. It's kind of cool. I wish at the end of the day that they had, you know, funneled more into the single player or made a co-op experience that was, you know, as involving and sort of open worldy as the single player stuff.
But, you know, co-oping Far Cry poses a bit of a design challenge to how you manage player expectations because there's so many ways to approach everything you do in Far Cry, right? There's degrees of stealth, and that's one of the beauties of the game is you can go stealth to, you know, wide open full auto in a millisecond, or you can go anywhere in between and you can range and, you know, do some silent kills but also do some loud kills and decide to use a vehicle. And the dynamic of having – when you're by yourself, that's great because you know the decisions you make and you're like, you know what? I'm deciding right now. I'm going to get loud.
Right.
But you could be in a case where you're trying to be stealthy and you're playing online with other folks in co-op. And unless they're like really good friends and, you know, you like have made agreements, you're like, well, shit, like I wasn't ready to go loud.
Right.
Or you go running in, and if you're a nice player, you might be like, well, I didn't mean to be an ass. I just wound up, you know, alerting this entire town because I was going to go blow them all up.
And I'll be honest with you. I don't even know if it's possible to play co-op completely stealthy because I don't know if it's they threw so many guys at us because, you know, every time we entered a village, somebody's like, oh, there's a dude, brap, 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 you know, shooting down immediately, and then everyone's going haywire. I don't know that you could actually go through co-op and just
bummer because the beauty of Far Cry lies in its flexibility to allow you to have a guided experience, still have a lot of story, still have a lot of narrative and things going on, but at the same time approach things however you choose to.
And co-op strips most of that out of there, and it basically you end up with another – it's like Left 4 Dead Light, you know? Like it's entertaining while it lasts, and the characters are kind of quirky and stuff, and it's got some fun scenarios, but at the end of the day, it does not deliver on the promise that Far Cry 3, the single player, does.
It shows how hard it is to design and have a design that works across both single player and multiplayer. And that's something that maybe we don't appreciate or haven't appreciated Halo games in particular enough for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because let me contrast. I blasted through the Black Ops 2 campaign over the weekend. And having played even just, you know, the first 3 or 4 hours of Far Cry, it was such a stark comparison between the way I felt playing Far Cry and the way I felt playing Black Ops 2. And this is, I mean, within the first hour or two of Black Ops 2, I immediately was struck by how much I felt like the design team at Treyarch was being held back, not just by the engine, which I will admit, in prior versions of Call of Duty games like Modern Warfare 3 and Black Ops 1, yes, there were folks who were like, oh, the engine's already showing its age, it's looking bad. But relative to what else was out then, I felt like it was still competitive, at least. You really get a sense now in Black Ops 2 of how much the visual fidelity world has moved on, even on console, past where that engine's capabilities lie. And then there are also some
Looking at Halo 4.
Oh, my God, for sure. But then there's some other really weird things about an engine that's been around that long and had so many pieces of tech, you know, put into the jigsaw puzzle that's become the engine. Because when you're just looking at characters and the way that they are, you know, they've done such detailed work with facial animation and especially the lip sync system, you're like, wow, the characters in this game in Black Ops 2 look really phenomenal when they're just having, you know,
cutscene-like interactions. Mm-hmm. But then you're looking at the rest of the world around them, and there's just this stark doll out of place in dollhouse effect.
Yeah, it's just everything's kind of blurry and low res, and
it just doesn't look right. Simple. And the environments aren't furnished even to the same level of fidelity, and the lighting isn't up to the same degree of fidelity. Like you're looking at someone's like you're looking at any one of our faces sitting around this table right now, and there's a number of shadows that play across our faces and wrinkles and facial features and lines. And in Black Ops 2, because they've progressed so far in pushing their face and you know their narrative tech, they have some of those nuances there. But then as soon as you pan around the room, like the wall looks like a flat wall with a texture map thrown on it.
Yeah.
And it's really pretty jarring.
But we look good here because we're all Frostbite 2 engine.
Right.
That's what you are. That's what you are, right, Jeff?
Yeah, and I'm 60 frames a second.
Well, that's which impressive.
Is, yeah.
And that was the argument for Black Ops 2, is that they were staunchly adamant that they were maintaining 60 frames per second, which they did. That's great. I'm happy for them. And it does.
I mean, it makes a difference.
The game flows very well, but you know, I have to say that having plowed through the camp. Oh, so the second part of that was not only has Treyarch's ambitions outgrown what that engine can do, but I think they've really outgrown what Call of Duty can be. I mean, I think that around every corner, I felt like they have more interesting design ideas that are just being held back by the fact that they're making Call of Duty and there are expectations of what Call of Duty will be. And that they just, and maybe they're not. Maybe that's just me wishful thinking.
Well, what do you mean? Let's dig deeper into that.
I mean that number one, just the level design of the game has become so very predictable and boring in that you know that you're always being herded down a corridor. There's very little room for variance. But in addition to that, you know that any time you get in a situation where they dial up the intensity a little bit, the answer is to push as hard as you can, because if you can trip the node that is one node past the node you're at, then everything will wash back out like the tide going back out to sea. And it is so damn at this point. And once you know that, it's really hard to not take advantage of. It's really hard. I mean, I found myself later on in the game trying to fight in the staged environments where I was supposed to have a fight rather than push across to get to that node to hit the trigger point so that I could control the event. But there's a point where you're like, you know what? I know what's happening. Like, this is just dumb. I don't want to sit here and wait for these guys to spawn. I'm just going to...
But you think that's the Call of Duty-ness of...
I think that's very Call of Duty-ness. Yeah, I don't know a lot of games that utilize that anymore.
The answer is be the one-man wrecking ball, push, push, push.
The one-man push wrecking ball, push, push, push. Contrast it. Push, push, push. Contrasted to a Halo model, which is... Here is a event area, and we're going to drop dudes around here, and then procedurally, they're just going to do whatever they do, and you're going to have to fight them. Versus
there's plenty of points in Halo 4 where you have to push, push, push as well.
There are, I agree, but I mean they are inherently a little broader in the areas that they sort of give you arena and then travel and then arena and then travel, whereas Call of Duty is corridor, 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 push, 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 and then they maybe open it out a little bit, but they're not opening it up into a large
the
scale.
The AI comparison between the two is just, I mean, from what I can tell the past several Call of Duty games, AI is just really sort of a misnomer, because what they're doing is it's the linear corridor crawl, and then guys spawn and pop out in the exact same spot, and then they stick to cover, and they, you know.
And if you crank it up to hardened, it just feels like they hit you more and soak up more bullets.
Yep.
Do you think the Treyarch is not deliberately, but just kind of shortchanging, you know, the campaign because everybody's going to be playing multiplayer?
No, I don't think they were shortchanging it. I think that they they brought in a very talented Hollywood screenwriter, and there are some interesting ideas at play here. I mean, the way the game jumps between the historic era of Vietnam and then moving into Afghanistan and the current day the current day for the game, which is modern times 2025, is really cool. And I mean, it's a narrative vehicle that has been used before in other movies and books, but it's really effective, and they do it very well here. And it's a nice vehicle for them to communicate the motivations and the characters of the modern world and where they came from in the earlier world. But then I attribute it to being a Call of Duty, because it's a Call of Duty, everything has to be so ridiculously over the top and ham-handed And it's like, you know what? You could be a little more nuanced with this. You don't have to be,
right.
You don't have to be a bad Vietnam flick about everything. Like, mm-hmm. not every guy has to be a ridiculous grunt with, you know, two syllable word vocabularies and an
the
inability.
First syllable is always fuck.
Yeah, and an inability to see anything beyond. Well, I'm gonna go shoot the fuck out of those fuckers. It's just dumb. And
let me ask you this question. My friend and former co-host Dan Trachtenberg has always been a big fan of the Call of Duty roller coaster ride event filmness of the franchise.
Yep.
And he was telling – I haven't played COD Blobs 2, but he was telling me that he found this one to be less like that, that he couldn't apply the same praise to it that he felt the games have.
I agree.
Did that go back to some of what – you guys were talking about the engine being dated at this point, like
and I think also Treyarch really looking to aspire to be more about the narrative and the story and having an interesting complex game in that regard, as opposed to just bowling you over with a million and one, you know, amusement ride scenes. But the result of that is that one of the questions Jeff asked me before the game was, you know, would I play this again? Like, what were some of the high points? And I kind of tell you, like, having just played it through 3-4 days ago and finished, a lot of it has just dribbled out my ear like applesauce. It's like, right. I don't even remember half of what was in it, because it was just sort of like an endless push forward with an assault rifle in my hand of like, oh, I got to kill the next set of guys. Oh, here's another set of guys. I got to get them down, and then I move forward, and then I got to get the next set of guys. And that's unfortunate. You know, that really is unfortunate, because there were some cool, you know, potential ideas there. There are some really good parts to it. Like, there's one part. And this is the other thing. It's like, it must be so labor expensive for them to make these games. So they do. And I mean, yeah. I think everybody's seen it. Like, there's a sequence where you get a wingsuit,
mm-hmm.
and the wingsuit thing is really cool. It lasts 30 seconds. It's the only time you use it. It's like, you're in. You do the wingsuit thing. You're flying around the wingsuit. You're like, this is badass. And then that's that.
Dan was telling me about a section where you're tethered to another guy, and you're each using each other as the fulcrum for your.
Yep.
For your pendulum to swing from place to place with a sort of
what did Dan think
Mission
of that?
Impossible. He thought that was awesome. He's like, that should be in a movie with the, like, Mission Impossible cups.
Yeah, they have like these. They have nano gloves, yeah.
Nano suit gloves,
right?
And they have little circles on the back of them, and they're like orange when they're not connected, and when they have like a firm grip.
That's what
the
Tom Cruise was wearing in Mission Impossible 4, right?
I haven't seen 4. Ghost Protocol.
It's awesome.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's on the side of the building in Dubai wearing those things.
So here's a question I have for you: that fulcrum swinging thing. I finished that section and thought to myself, you know, that's one of those obligatory QTE-like pieces that I would just as happily have probably just watched.
Yeah.
Because all you do in that section is, one guy, you press a button so that your partner jumps. And when he jumps, you use the thumbstick to swing him. Mm-hmm. And when he finishes swinging, he connects. And then he swings you around. And when you go up to the rock face, you pull both triggers. Well, and that's the extent of the interaction.
That's not really a QTE, though. I think that's one step above a QTE. Because at least those actions are sort of have a
one-to-one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have a
replicate
what
you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
But yeah, it is. It does sort of, you know, walk that line.
Sure.
That fine line.
Yeah. I understand.
It's no David Cage. It's no David Cage moment. So,
right.
Oh, by the way, wingsuit, Far Cry 3.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
That's really cool.
And that's how you do a wingsuit. Mm. That's all I'm going to say.
And then, you know, this part is maybe the hardest part to have to say, because I know these guys have put a lot of work into it, is that I think that one of the things that used to be great about Call of Duty was how solid the guns felt in your hands and how good the sense of shooting felt in the game. And that's been surpassed as well. Hmm. The game just doesn't have the punch it used to have. It doesn't have the satisfying sense of gunplay that it used to have. Hmm. I would say that, you know, arguably the raw AK-47 in Far Cry 3 is more fun and visceral than any of the wealth of weapons in Blops 2. And there's a wealth of weapons in the game. But that's another thing they don't handle very well is, you know, this game definitely from the outset expects you to have played a lot of Call of Duty before, which I suppose is fine. But it also
because everyone has who's going to buy that game.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
And everyone has, period, because it sold so many. But it also presents you with this wealth of new weapons that have all these crazy sorts of scopes and stuff on them. And you don't have that built-in library in your head of, oh, you know, this is an M1A1. I really like this. I really like using the Marine rifle, even though it's a single shot. Or this is a, you know, this is a HK. I like using a G93. Like, you don't have those because there's no longer those weapons. Now it's new weapons, like, you know, with different sorts of magic scopes. Like one scope that sends out like a light pulse and lets you identify bodies inside the space. And another one that allows you to like use heat signatures, I guess, to identify where people are, and then sniper rifle. Where
all that sounds cool, though. It's cool. You say it like as a negative.
No, it is cool. But what's challenging is you're in a very high-paced game, and in that high-paced game, it's very difficult to know: do I pick up that gun and have it as one of my two guns, or do I keep the gun I'm using right now?
But don't you think Call of Duty has always been built for like, hey, the guns you start the level with are pretty much the guns you want?
No, actually, I would say that usually the way I felt Call of Duty was situated was, the guns that you launch with are the guns that your operative class and situation would have launched with.
Right.
And you're going to have a finite amount of ammo because no one's going to drop that ammo, and you'll have to scavenge something out of the battlefield to move on. In other words, like, you drop in with your U.S. issue, whatever it is, and within, you know, 300 rounds, you've exhausted your ammo, and now you have to start scavenging what's around.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess that's true.
That's true. Although Halo 4 does a much better job of that, like, if, you know, that encouraging that behavior of like, okay, I'm running. It's yeah, you pretty much have to. You're like, okay, where's my next? You're taking a dude out. You're like, where's my next gun at?
Yeah,
like,
it is Halo-ish in that.
Even I think much more than any previous Halo, in my opinion. It forces you to be varied because you simply can't just hang on to the guns you've got.
Yeah, it's an ammo issue.
Yeah, but let me ask you one question. We can wrap this up. Do you think it's imperative for the next Call of Duty game to be a new engine? Do you think it's time and it has to happen?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Because comparing it to Halo, you look at Halo 4 and those guys pushed, I mean, obviously it's a different studio, but they pushed that title and that franchise forward.
If you're going to be the heavyweight title bearer or title contender, you've got to stay in contention, and to stay in contention, they need to move on. And that's a tough order because they've been building on that engine for forever and ever, and going to a new engine.
Yeah.
This is going to be a scary, scary time for them. But it's, they have to do that.
Well, especially when you're annualized like that. You're like,
well, do you think
and we didn't talk about Strike Force, which I think was, I applaud them for the effort made in Strike Force. I think that the design needed another 6 to 8 weeks worth of refinement. So Strike Force is this part in the game where you get to play essentially a battlefield commander real-time strategy view and hop into the drones and soldiers on the ground and play, you know, sort of what would ordinarily be team-based sort of events.
Sorry, my lightsaber's going on.
The force is strong.
It's funny.
And so it's a very cool idea, right? It's a very cool idea. It's like what we all thought about, like, the general role in Battlefield, like getting to command people and send them around. The struggle is this. They are hard-ish matches, even on regular, much less on Harden. And when you are in the commander's view, what they didn't do was provide you with enough virtualized indicators of what's going on in orientation to keep a frame of reference of where you are. Let me explain what I mean. You get a map at the beginning of briefing, and let's say, you know, here's this place, Jeff, and you need to hold this point, and this point on this map. And if you lose two of them, then this thing's going to happen and you're going to be on your last stand. Okay, great. Now, when you go into the game, it doesn't have an overlay of that map. It doesn't have any good visual indicators other than, you know, some chevrons to show you where they are. And now you're looking at it in 3D space, and it's really challenging to get oriented quickly. Mm-hmm. Plus, you've got to be able to find your guys. And like, this was a constant problem I was having in this mode, was trying to find where my forces were and get them where I needed to be, what needed them to be, in a logical and tactical manner. Because if I'm going to be tactical commanding, then I want to be tactical commanding. And it just, that part was clunky. And what I ultimately found was the way to fix this was to get some groups going where I needed to, pick which one of them I thought was going to be the strongest, hop in, and just go back to Call of Duty-ing it and kick ass.
Yeah.
Which sort of
defeats the purpose.
Kind of took away from that mode a little bit, you know?
One more little quick point about the engine thing. I wonder if they're really just trying to coincide the engine change to new tech console-wise.
Possibly.
You know, the new generation.
Or they're dealing
consoles
with the annualized cycle and they didn't, you know, I mean.
Although as big as Activision is, I have a hard time. I mean, I think they probably already working on that.
It'll be interesting to see this year if Call of Duty is on the same engine or if it's on a new engine. It feels like we may have new console hardware coming out at that same time. It'll be very interesting.
Yeah, timing's weird.
Yeah.
All right, so we didn't talk about multiplayer. We can if we want to. I haven't done it yet, but I want to talk about maybe some shooting games in multiplayer when we come back on the other side of this quick break.
The Mayans prophesied that come December 21st, 2012, that with the alignment of the planets and stars, the world would end. Or something like that. Well, that sounds to us like a great opportunity to enjoy some of the greatest PC games ever made before that fateful day. So join us in our end of days with Gamefly's not-so-scary end-of-the-world sale, where the only thing you need to worry about is saving your hard-earned cash. Go to www.gamefly.com/download-games to see what's on sale today.
So to finalize that point that I was making about shooting games and multiplayer, I didn't play Black Ops 2 multiplayer, and I was thinking about it, and I've never been a core Modern Warfare player, but I've certainly enjoyed the hell out of just running around in circles and, you know, picking up guns and tossing grenade and shooting people. But you know what? I may have reached that point where I'm kind of tired of it. Mm. I'm not feeling the pull this time. It's really, and I was thinking about it, I'm like, well, you know, this is kind of weird. And we've always read posts about, you know, people getting shooter fatigue. And I've always sort of passed that off a little bit because I've always thought to myself, oh, yeah, I've been tired of shooters, but usually I go play something else and then I'm like ready for another shooter and I'm ready to come back and go like, yeah, have fun with it. But I don't know. Like, what about you guys? Where do you feel? Where are you right now on the curve of how many more multiplayer online games of you running around with a gun in your hand and shooting things are you interested in?
I'm kind of in the camp where as far as military shooters go, somebody needs to do something new. I'm kind of over it. You know, I mean, like my big heyday with military shooters was, you know, Counter-Strike Beta, like way back in the day. That was when I really peaked and was playing tons of hours and stuff like that. But like shooters in general, I think, like, I mean, you're playing the crap out of Borderlands still, right? Borderlands 2.
Yeah, but you know what? We play it co-op, so right. It's not competitive. And B, I don't really think of Borderlands as a shooter so much as I think of it as a loot whore Diablo clone with, you know, 3D shooting graphics.
And that's fair. And that sort of goes to my point is that game, like, if shooting is one of your core mechanics and you're doing something cool and new like that, I'm totally fine with it. It's when I'm like, okay, I'm generic military dude B and I'm, you know, going on mission X and it's the same. I'm going to shoot a bunch of guys in the face and, you know, that's it. Like, yeah. I mean, there isn't. I don't know. Maybe somebody can make a Call of Duty game that's more than just running through corridors and, you know, shooting scripted dudes. But
I do think we are in the minority, though.
We may well be.
There's a hell of a lot of people that are still digging it.
I think that if they, you know, when we saw the Metal Gear tease video that Kojima showed, the fidelity of that thing was incredible, right? Mm-hmm. What if we can also advance the mechanics of shooting games? And I'm not implying that I want stealth games because I'm not actually the biggest fan of stealth games. I've never, like, I don't like the fail, go back to jail kind of nature of them. Mm-hmm. But what if we could foster a little bit, you know, like, one hit, one kill is not going to be that fun, right? There are people who like that. Counter-Strike certainly lives under the, you know, you get hit in the wrong spot with a bullet, you're going to go down as
but,
you would.
But there's a reason that works, and it's because the matches are so tight and and small and quick and, you know.
What if there was some middle ground between that and where, you know, Call of Duty has gotten to be of, you know, like, guy takes a saw in front of you and unloads a clip and might bring you down if you have a flak jacket on or whatever. What if there's like a middle ground where it could not be also that same just running crazy ridiculous speed? What if there's a middle ground where you could have, you know, some, you know, tactical tools and thoughtfulness? I don't know what it, I don't
you
know
mean
where
like
it is.
DayZ?
Well, yeah, DayZ does incorporate a lot of that. You're right.
I think that's,
and like an Arma 2 did, which is what's the basis for that. But something that could take that out of the realm of being so hardcore and make it understandable, where you could enjoy and play the tactics of it without having to be a super core military guy.
And I hate bringing up Far Cry 3 again, that's what that game does so well is it takes the sim aspects from, you know, those other games and distills it down into something that's easily playable, like, you know. Yeah. You know how hunting and crafting works immediately, and it's like it's not – it's streamlined.
Yeah.
And it's that valley between pure sim and Call of Duty that, you know, there is some fertile middle ground in there, but, like, I don't see a lot of games doing that.
But what's so fun about that game too is that there's so much more to do and so much so many more reasons behind what you're doing rather than move forward.
Well, yeah, and of the whatever, you know, say you're a completionist and you spend 40 or 50 hours on that game, maybe half the time you're shooting dudes in the face.
Yeah.
So
other times you're shooting
– or you're hang gliding or you're shooting a bear in the face. Yeah,
That's one of the reasons why I wanted to try Far Cry 3 because Sacrilege – I'm not a military shooter guy. I have never played any of the military shooters. I have no desire to play them whatsoever. So that's why I've kind of been quiet while you guys have been going on this interesting discussion. But Far Cry 3 actually gives me that inclination that's something that I want to try because it's not as unforgiving. It's, you know,
well, and there's just flat out more to do in it.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. And you know, I watched my son play through Black Ops 2. And he was having a blast, and it's something that he's interested in. But I was watching watching him play it, and I just really couldn't get into it. So, like I said, it's something that you know, Far Cry 3, from the sound of your review and what you said, you know, gives me the opportunity to play that type of shooter without the military fatigue or the shooter fatigue that you were explaining. So, I'm actually looking forward to trying Far Cry 3.
You should. It's good. Yeah. By the way, Jeff, you will trip out if you play the Black Ops 2 campaign.
Yes.
You do go in to rescue Noriega.
No way.
Yeah. And it's all kinds of messed up. It's all kinds of messed up with double crosses and stuff. Oh yeah, it's all kinds of messed up.
All right. Well, I'm standing by my position. I can't pay for this game, but maybe I'll rent it from GameFly.
It's all kinds of messed up.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Let's enough with the guns and bullets. Number of the guns and bullets. Somebody wants to talk about dead people.
I do. Well, you know, the VGA Game of the Year.
Which, by the way, did you see Keeley's note to Twitter that Far Cry 3 is eligible for next year?
Oh, that's funny.
It's so weird the way that, I mean, it's just a shame. Like, you know the funny thing about, like, I will only take a second with this aside. The VGAs have a very, very good advisory council that votes on the awards. It's made up of a number of great journalists and people across the video game industry. But it's so weird still, like the show is more about, I mean, they were a little better this year, but still it's more about like showing what's going to be cool next year.
And you know what? I agree. And I'm not a fan of the way the awards show kind of rolls out. But for all the flack that I gave it and continue to give it, I think it's great that Walking Dead won the award. I think
it's cool, but it's still too early. Look, we didn't make this point well last week because someone asked me, like, "Well, don't you think they should be?" Yeah, I think actually, video game awards, like every other award for like the year, shouldn't. How can you have the award in December? There's not even any time to deliberate.
That's where we are, and that's what it is. And
it is what it is.
It is what it is. But
it
I
is
think
because
that
it's being used as a trailer vehicle.
Well, of course,
which is a shame.
Of course, but. On top of that, you can have all those legitimate complaints, which I do, but it you know, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about this and I was like, well, I don't know of any – there are plenty of movies that I go see because they were nominated for Academy Awards, but I can't think of a game that I wanted to play it more because it won the video game award. Mm-hmm. Well, finally, I think there is a game that's going to benefit from winning Game of the Year. I think there's going to be a whole bunch of people who play that game.
Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't have before because
it's
a point and click adventure.
You had already started it, though.
I had, but I was motivated to finish it. And fucking A, dude. Holy shit.
Okay, how far were you into it? Because I haven't heard you gush about it.
Okay, I had just started episode 2.
Oh, so you weren't very far at all.
And so I powered. I sat down like watching watching The Wire or something, where I sit down with the entire season and go through it, which is a great way to play. I mean, these are really wonderful episodic. They all feel differently from one another, but playing them back to back, you really see all the stuff that carries over, and it's great that the game won the award, and I think it's almost redundant now to heap praise upon it. But I'm going to proceed to because I think it's. Am I the only person here that's finished it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know, John?
No, I powered through. I powered through episodes after it won the award. I powered through episodes 1 through 3,
mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be playing 4 and 5 when I get back home.
And I'm only halfway through 2.
I think it is the best storytelling in the history of video games.
Really?
Name me a game that has better storytelling.
Final Fantasy 13.
Ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, I guess the contenders would be like Uncharted. Heavy Rain.
Black Ops 2.
No, but seriously.
No, you have to go indie to get to...
Heavy Rain.
Like...
Heavy Rain. Okay. I thought long and hard about this.
Okay.
The First of all, Walking Dead has it's fantastically well written and well realized. I mean, it stands up next to the best TV shows or movies that you will see. And I honestly think it is the best version of Walking Dead. It's better than the television show and it's better than the comic book. And I don't know of any other video game realization of an IP that you could say the video game is the best version of that IP that exists.
I think you just were blasphemous, by the way.
What?
You said it was better than the comic book.
It is better than the comic book. It's the best. It might be the best.
What makes it better than the comic
book?
Yeah, that's the source material.
Why?
Well, it's very different than the comic book. It's a whole different group of people.
What makes the game so compelling in the first place is the core mechanic, which is, okay, here's a fucked up situation. You've got a couple seconds to figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And make a decision really quick and watch the impact of your decisions play out in the next, you know.
I think, I'm given to hyperbole and I love loving things, but I really feel that this is the first of the beginning of where video games are going. Not in mechanics,
Delivery.
In narrative delivery. I think this is the Watchmen of video games. Like in 1986 or whatever it was when Watchmen came out, comic books were sort of just, you know, they were still ghettoized and still, marginalized, and they were still sort of just pop for kids stuff. And it was sort of bubbling up. But then Alan Moore puts out this work, you know, and Dark Knight Returns is similar. But he puts out this work that goes, you can take comic books and what comic books are talking about and talk about and have a nuanced, human, adult storyline that speaks about our world, that is literature. And it changed everything. And I think that's kind of where Walking Dead fits into the pantheon of video games. It's the first video game story that treats its audience as an adult, that delivers interesting, nuanced, varied characters where you are influencing the story and what you do has absolute consequences. So it is inherently interactive, but it also communicates a story that can stand up next to any other storytelling medium. I think it's the first time in video games. I don't think Heavy Rain did it, and I don't think any other game has. I really don't. I mean,
well, to be fair, I think that the point, and Jeff, I don't mean to put words in your mouth. It's actually, I feel like, picking up on a lot of themes that indie game designers have been working on over the past couple of years. So I think that it's a more mainstream reflection of some of that maturation process that has its grassroots in indie games.
I would completely agree with that. I mean, I have – somebody asked a question – one of the questions of the week that's, you know, cropped up this week was about that thing, train came off the tracks. Where am I here?
You're going to Amnesia Dark Descent.
That would be episode 3.
Oh yeah. So just narrative delivery in game. So The Walking Dead, you know, getting all these accolades is great, but I think back to, you know, a multitude of indie game experiences where really it's a developer, and part of their design ethos is I'm going to expose like my most sensitive nerve and put it out there in a format, and it's a very, like, you feel catharsis in a lot of these smaller projects because they're very deeply personal. And I think that as a result, you get more connected and end up having these experiences that really sort of resonate with you. I think Walking Dead, from a narrative delivery standpoint, does that exactly that, because it makes you feel like very, very participatory in the story, but also that everything that you decide to do, it's not like I looked at the four conversation choices that they were giving me and go, yeah, man, this choice obviously sucks or is the wrong one. Or it was always like, oh, these are all interesting ways to approach this situation. And as a result, you put your own personal stamp on those.
Not only that, but every time I always found myself, the thing in my head that I wanted to say in response was one of the things. You know what right. I mean? Like the thing that naturally, Jeff, if I was in that situation and someone said that thing to me and I would hear the way I would want to reply was one of the things that was written as one of my selections. And that's a really wonderful, empowering feeling. It's good writing is what it is. But to your point about the indie thing, I don't mean to take anything away from all the fantastic progress that indie developers and daring that indie developers have exhibited in making very personal, very story-driven, very mature and interesting story in games. I don't want to take away from any of that, but it does take the mainstream version of that. It takes the accessible version to legitimize it in the same way that comic books had been wallowing, and there were these blips that were happening. I mean, Mouse is pre Watchmen. There's a lot of examples of comics doing that beforehand, but it's the mainstream version. It's the one that goes, we're going to play inside your wheelhouse and do this very popular IP, this very, you know, it's zombies, which, you know, there's nothing more populist than that at this point.
No, I totally agree with you. I could not agree more.
And the real achievement of the game is that they take this very simplistic gameplay mechanism, the sort of point and click adventure stylings, and they manage to deliver action sequences that mm-hmm. are as thrilling as any movie action sequence I've seen, and new characters that change over time, and the fact that they can do all of that inside a context where I can make wildly different decisions than Jeff in my version of that game, and it carries through from episode to episode. And the things that I decided really have weight. And especially at the end, literally everything that you've done resonates and matters. Everything that you've done by the end of that five episodes has an effect.
And that payoff delivers with much more force and emotional response from everything I've gathered from talking to people than all of the admittedly very heavy lifting work that went into Mass Effect.
I think it really shows what a, and I forgive me for being this strong and heavy-handed about it, but what a joke the idea of Mass Effect being that is.
And you took the words right out of my mouth. I was actually going to bring up Mass Effect as a, you want to know how impactful Walking Dead storytelling delivery is, you compare it to Mass Effect and you look at Mass Effect and you're like, well, what they did was they broke every decision into good, bad, or information.
Right.
And it's like there was no, you know,
shades of gray.
Yeah, I never agonized about a decision I made in Mass Effect. I was either playing to my character type or playing mm-hmm. against it. Whereas this was very human. Every decision feels like a fresh thing, like not like, oh, I'm the paladin, so I'm going to do the good thing. Right. It's like,
you're not playing a video game.
Yeah, you're not.
You're experiencing a story.
Yes.
And you're making decisions within the context of that story that matter to you. And I was completely invested, and my opinion about characters changed, and I learned more about them, and I was not siding with Kenny at the beginning and learning more about him and developing friendships with people and caring about people. And I was sitting in front of my computer screen having reactions to a video game that I've never had before. I would gasp. I would say things out loud all alone in my apartment to nobody that, like, oh my God, like, well, that doesn't happen with video games.
Episode 3 had a lot of those.
The funniest thing about this, though, is if you – another comparison to the Mass Effect series is that neither game really, like, at the end of the day, changes so dramatically that, like, you're like, okay, well, this is basically two flavors to get to the same ending. And it's true for both games, but Walking Dead is so much better at it because you – regardless of which decisions you make, even though it's funneling you to the, you know, basically the same place, you feel invested in them. Like it's not just good, bad.
But it's also superior storytelling. It's
superior writing and
superior writing at every level, and superior delivery of that story. I mean, it's cinematic. It's beautifully shot. In fact, I'd like to pose a question to you guys because it's something that I was wondering as I played. Do you think this game would be less good, better, or the same if it was full motion video, if it was filmed actors and you played the game in the exact same way, but everything was filmed with real human beings?
I loved the art style that they used. So that would be sort of the caveat. But taking away all gameplay, stripping out all the gameplay mechanics except for conversation making or conversation decisions, I'd be totally fine with.
Yeah,
I mean, because that's the nut of the game. That's
I think the art style is beautiful. I agree with you, but I also found the acting, the facial expressions to be so sadly simplistic. And I think that if it had, I think I mentioned this weeks ago when we were talking about the first episode. If it had had the sort of LA noir facial technology,
sure,
or it could literally just be a filmed set with. I mean, it's better than the television show.
I'm undecided. I think that, if anything, my answer, and this is not intended as a cop-out, is that it would be different. Mm. And it would be different in that my experience playing through the first chapter and, you know, most of the second has been that in those moments, by virtue of them not being acted by a human or a very lifelike, you know, virtual actor, I'm more readily able to project myself into the scenes. And I fear that if they were real acted characters, that that would remove the imagination piece that I bring to the table of finishing out that character with me.
But
in
that
it
doesn't because, happen when you watch a film or television show.
But a film or a television show isn't this game.
I know, but it's you are able to put yourself in that situation when you fall in love along with
it's
Brad
different
Pitt
though,
or whatever.
It's different, though, watching something happening to somebody else who is obviously not you. And then also and then trying to insert yourself
I'm not controlling Brad Pitt in that movie.
Right. I mean, I get what you're saying. Like if a game could work in FMV format, like that style of dialogue choice and stuff could work. I mean, it's a choose your own adventure with.
Yeah, I don't see how it wouldn't.
I just think that. But to Garnett's point, I think that sort of. There's something to be said about having that stylized art that allowed me to sort of. Get more emotionally invested and not, you know, I just don't know if I'm ready to play like an interactive TV show, full motion TV show.
Playing
like
Walking Dead, I am in this crazy messed up hallucination with these people. And that is conveyed very well through that, you know, stylized comic panel approach. Whereas if it was real people, I think that, you know, a degree of that fantastical nature is lost.
I don't know. I mean, the television show does exactly the same thing. It's asking you to care about those people in the same way.
But I'm not controlling them. I'm not making choices. There I'm watching the drama play out here. I think that one of the things that you know, oftentimes the most simple explanations of things are the ones that prove to be accurate. You've said it three times, and I just would like to emphasize that I think that you nailed it in that the writing is so very good in this. Because I think the comparison to Mass Effect is natural, and the thing about Mass Effect that happens is that the game is much more game-like in that there are a number of systems that are all in play there. There's the combat system, there are the power systems, there's the Renegade Paragon thing that's going on, there's all of the RPG systems that are going on behind the scenes for your character development, and by virtue of that, the conversation system became a game system. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's why, as the Mass Effect series went on, it became increasingly more driven by the mechanics of looking at that wheel, getting info out of characters, or making a paragon or a renegade choice, because all of those things were playing into the system of the game. And that's one approach, and that's a fine approach. That approach is driven by, we've got this big RPG, we have all these different character traits, we have all these systems going on, we have to make them interoperate. Versus The Walking Dead, which I think one of the reasons it works is because it was approached very much as a narrative adventure. And they weren't worried about giving you a choice that makes you a paragon or makes you a renegade. And that's one of the beauties of the whole Walking Dead series, right? The reason people like the comics is that
there are no right answers.
All the discussions about right answers and wrong answers are out the window.
Yeah.
Because
that's the whole fun of post-apocalyptic fiction. Is all your moral systems are called into question because all bets are off.
And they really embrace that. And because they coupled that with really great writing, which is, I think, beautiful way you put that, was that every time you've come to a decision-making process, the one that you wanted was there. I mean, I don't even know how you get to the point where you're that intuitive a writing team, but I agree with you that that's one of the beauties of that game, is that you don't sit there and look at my most fun experience of the time I played with Walking Dead was going through those choices and not going... Mass Effect, John, you're playing Baldur's Gate. Baldur's Gate had all of those characters. Look, conversation choices are not anything new.
Right.
Conversation choices, the way they work in Walking Dead feel new, because instead of going through there and trying to figure out, is this the one that gives me plus one lawful? Is this the one that gives me plus one evil? Is this the one that gives me plus one paragon? You're just thinking, shit, what the hell do I do now?
Exactly.
I really do feel like this is a harbinger of where video games are going, and not
could
in
go.
I think it's where they are
I think
going.
A lot of them will try to go, but it's because they are system-driven. And keep in mind, not every game would – can you imagine how would The Walking Dead with this system support the heavy role-playing, system-driven combats and all that kind of stuff that a Mass Effect has?
You use – instead of making the game primarily a shooter with RPG elements, you tell a story. Mm-hmm. And then as you're going through your story and building the gameplay around that, you go, look – this is going to serve my story because it's important for this reason. And you build, instead of going, all right, here's where they're going to battle on this planet. And why are they here? We got to figure out a reason why they're here. You know, we got to introduce this character. The mechanical nature of building a story, I think, is the stronger writers are actually telling.
I completely agree. Well, what I mean is that as a paragon in Mass Effect, you have certain skills and abilities that behoove you in combat that are open to you. So as you're making dialogue choices, part of your brain probably is thinking, wow, you know, I really want to get to be maxed out paragon because I want to get to this skill. But if you introduce that element, it's going to poison the waters some of the Walking Dead experience.
Excuse me, one second. Let me just belabor my analogy a little bit longer and say that the way comic books used to be made is we need to get to the big superhero punch out moment because that's what the kids are paying their 15 cents
sure,
for.
Sure.
So let's figure out a way to get to the big superhero punch out moment and fill in all the, you know, ridiculous things that happen to them along the way. And we're making Pulp Fiction for kids, right? And then all of a sudden people came along and went, no, you know what? This is a storytelling medium where we can tell adult stories with interesting nuance, depth, and, you know, speak about the human condition. And they went, oh, there's things about this medium that make that even more interesting here. It's going to happen the same way for comic book or for video games, because and I think Walking Dead is the first example of that really happening. I think David Cage is trying to do it as well, and there are other indie people that are trying to do it, but the best example of it succeeding and working and being meshing with the interactive medium in a way that completely works is Walking Dead. Go ahead, John. Sorry.
It's okay. I think getting back to what you were saying about choosing Renegade Paragon, I think the whole fact of putting labels on the way you play is what makes Walking Dead succeed over Mass Effect, because you don't have those labels in The Walking Dead. There is no right or wrong answer. It's going into the depth of your soul and saying, like, oh my God, what choice do I have to make? And, you know, there is no plus ones. There's, okay, this person's going to die. Okay, this person is no longer going to be part of the group. And it's one of those things where, you know, you're making hard decisions. Now, the only thing that I have, and I haven't played through all the way to the end. So one of the things that I read, though, and you can clarify this for me, is that even though you are making these choices and you're making a lot of hard choices, and I do see them playing out through various parts of the episodes I'm playing, in the end, I have read different places that it says that it's kind of superficial in how it impacts the ending.
Well, it depends on your definition of superficial. For me, it was extraordinarily meaningful. It touched me at the end because I made those decisions, It depends on your definition of superficial. Did the building explode or not explode? No, it wasn't that big of a difference. As Jeff said, it's different ways of getting to the same destination. In my ridiculous non-example, the building explodes either way. But it's the fact that I crafted the circumstance around which that happens. I found to be so moving and so interesting because I took care in all of my decision-making process, and that was rewarded by going, hey, we remembered all those things you did, and all those things added up to bring you here in the specific way you got here, not in the fact that you got somewhere else than here. It's the way you got here was your way.
Now, would the experience, do you think, would the experience be changed if if you had more choices? So in other words, if it wasn't taking you to the same place, but it was taking you to possible different
places. I think we as in the history of video games, we've always sort of heralded the multiple ending as being somehow better than not. You know, like, oh, I remember back in the day when I was young, it's like, oh, this game has 40 endings, you know? Well, and it's like, that doesn't matter.
I think, well, the ending stuff specifically, I don't think matters, but stuff like, the only game I can think of at the moment is Witcher 2 that does this with a completely different chapter 2 opening, depending on your decisions in chapter 1, content that you will not see in the same way that you see it if you go the other direction.
I think one of the things that's come out here is that the emphasis has been the journey along the way, right? Because it's all about these decisions you make. And the journey along the way is one of the big pieces of how some folks have recommended that we get out of the stressfulness of games. And I'm curious, Jeff, when we come back, I want to get your impressions on your this could be a stressful game. The end of the world has happened. I want to know your experience with the game in that regard, and then talk a little bit about this idea of the compulsion to finish games, the stress of playing games, and some of those other topics that have been active on the Weekend Confirmed boards. All that and more when we continue on the other side of this break. That guitar phrase right there. It's one of my favorite, like, it's a very simple, very, very simple line, but I really like it. All right. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about the stressfulness inherent to some games. Of course, Dark Souls came up, which, by the way, congratulations, Dark Souls 2 announced. I know a number of people will be very excited about that. We got some responses on that, and I thought I would bring this up in reference to Walking Dead, which obviously there are a number of choices you make throughout the game that have, you know, in irrevocable changes in what's going to happen to you in the game. It's obviously a stressful situation. So I was wondering how you approach that. With this in mind, Camp Kusagi told us that one of the, on the stressfulness of hardcore games, he said that we have to let go of the need to finish every game we start. Remember, you also didn't want to play Zombie U.
Yeah.
He said that, you know, you can have fun playing, you said you can have fun playing Dark Souls and Zombie U because it's just be in the moment. You don't have to think about how far you've gone or how much further there is to go. Don't worry about whether you're making progress. And for the love of whatever floats your boat, stop treating your lost progress as a waste of time. It's not like you're being any more productive when you finish games.
So am I in the moment when I die at the same spot 14 times and do the same moment over and over again?
You know that book that I read the first 10 pages of over and over? Yeah.
Are you in the moment while you're reading them?
Not really.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, that's the problem. Is I can be in the moment as much as I want, but at a certain point, it feels frustrating to do the same thing over and over. And part of that can be what is fun about games. Part of that is, I mean, I have a great time when I'm playing Trials HD, doing the same stupid ass thing 1,000 times, trying to get it just right. But there are games where that somehow is the fun, N plus Trials HD,
Super Meat Boy.
And then there are games where that's just not fun at all for me personally.
I see what you're saying. I mean, you think what you're saying actually reflects what Red Swirl brought up, which says, I just think you need to let go of your fear of dying and fail states. That's pretty much how you learned to play old games. With today's games, when we sit down, we always expect to progress, but that's not how it always was. When you stepped into an arcade or sat down with your Super Nintendo, it was always, I wonder how far I'll get today, not, let's go ahead and beat this game. The fun was almost always in the journey, not the success. But the success was a journey. I mean, you were getting success. And that's the thing about, like, Trials HD, which you brought up. I mean, yeah, that is a game where you're going back, but the fun is in repeating it. So you're saying that, you know, the Dark Souls doesn't do that for you. Zombie U doesn't do that for you. But I think it does for many people.
Exactly. Yes. Some people, it is fun to keep repeating in Dark Souls. For me, not so much.
I think it depends on the game, really. Because, definitely. I mean, perfect example is going back and playing Baldur's Gate again. Baldur's Gate, you know, unless, you know, is one of those games where you have to go back and you have to save every 5 minutes because you make a stupid mistake and you've lost all your progress or you lose a key character. And that can be very stressful, especially if you've built them up. And, you know, I mean, you're talking about XCOM. I've started to play XCOM, and XCOM, you know, has some of that in it too, where you've built up your class, you built up your characters, you got them promoted, and all of a sudden you do something stupid and, you know, they're gone.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, those stakes really add juice to the experience. And what people love about Dark Souls is that feeling of high stakes of I gotta be on my game or I could lose everything. And for me, that level of stress of losing everything, it used to add some stakes when I was younger.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays, it just makes me feel uncomfortable, and I don't want
to
be doing that.
And hey, Dark Souls is still great to play. The minute-to-minute is great. Right. It's those moments where you're like, oh, yeah. Fuck.
Yeah.
Like, well, I mean, I had fun while I was playing, but now I'm going to go through that same dungeon again and remember not to like be in the way of that boulder when it comes down.
It's so hard to get all that gold to buy that one thing, and now that thing is gone, and
Well, Diablo 3 is another example of that. Especially as you're playing through all the different modes. If you don't have all the right gear, you're going to come up against these, you know, champions or you know, elites. They're going to keep kicking your ass and keep kicking your ass and keep kicking your ass, and you know, it gets to the point where I got really frustrated because I didn't have enough gear. I had not used the auction house, and it was one of those things where I just, you know, I put the game down for a long time just because I got so frustrated at dying all the time. It wasn't fun anymore.
I didn't find that to be the case with Diablo. I think that the stakes aren't really there for me in the sense of it's really just progression and what loot that dude's going to drop that I'm limited to or prevented from rather than kind of losing my own stuff, which I think is what's more stressful with Zombie U and Dark Souls. It's like it's the losing all the things I work so hard for.
Well, and those environments are super oppressive too.
Yeah.
Like it's really heavy, like dark, like,
yeah.
Like, you know,
any game where I'm looking down the barrel of a flashlight, I'm already just, this is uncomfortable. And there's a tiny little window of light. And then you add flashlights, batteries are running out. So you better conserve those things. And then I'm like,
here's a mission timer for it. Oh no.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So another element of that has become the save anywhere state thing. And this is something that we've started to take for granted some, right? And being able to save and reload and go back. I love this story. And this is a story. I'm just going to tell it because I thought it was a really cool story that Pudgy Ninja wrote in with. It says, in today's reload and retry games, you kind of cut yourself off from so many things. Pretty much all of my favorite gaming experiences came from permadeath Iron Man type situations. One I often recount came from the original XCOM. It was my second or third run through the game playing Iron Man style. I'd set up several bases around the world as radar stations and interceptor refueling posts. I'd hired a couple dozen soldiers to test for psychic abilities. The ones who didn't have any were shipped off to one of these various radar stations to make room at my main base. And then one of those bases got attacked by an alien battleship, something I didn't even know was possible. So I had to defend this base with 20 to 30 rookies. They'd never been on a mission. They didn't have any equipment. As they explored,
sounds like a movie.
I know. As they explored the storerooms, they found the two stun rods and one handgun with one clip that comprised the entirety of the base's armament. And I set out to defense of the station against a large, heavily armed alien attack party.
It's Red Dawn in outer space.
Base of rookies this summer.
On Earth.
Yeah.
I lost half my men in the first couple of contacts. But acquired a few of the aliens' plasma weapons. And from there, I was able to take out a couple more aliens and fully arm the remaining members of my base staff, and then had a final confrontation in the base hangar against two sectopods. Only three of my original 20-plus soldiers survived, but we held the base against impossible odds, and it was amazing.
It looks like you're not a rookie anymore, kid.
roll credits.
Yeah. But
Pudgy Ninja makes a great point that this is the sort of experience that you'll never have if you're scared of permadeath games. And I don't play them because I like being punished. I don't play them because I want to brag about how great I am. I play them because they allow me to have experiences like this. And in Reload and Retry games, I just would have gone to an earlier save state, shipped a bunch of vets and guns to the base before the invasion, or just shot down the battleship, or any number of other easier paths. But while that would have been easier, there's no way it would have been more fun.
That's what I'm talking about that juice. That some people just get that juice from the stakes being really high.
You like the juice?
And the juice is a good, eh? I get it, the juice for you. But for me, I've just gotten to the point, and I still enjoy that sometimes, but for me, I've gotten to the point where when I'm looking for just enjoyment, that kind of juice is a detriment to my enjoyment. It's not pure fun. It's edge of my seat excitement, and that could be good too, but lately I've just kind of wanted to have fun.
So how did that result in you going back to Terra?
Going back to Terra. Well, here's going the thing with Terra. I think I've mentioned the fact that I was going to go back to Terra on this show a dozen times. Every time we talk about an MMO, I'm like, but I'm going to go back to Terra.
But Lindsay Lohan always went out.
Yeah. What? No.
I thought you were talking about Tara Reid.
I'm only interested in complete train wreck chicks. That's the theory we're going on now. All the TRS guys decided to go back to Terra. We all love it.
Oh, awesome.
We all love it. Here's the dilemma. Terra's a fantastic MMO. Sadly, it still costs a monthly fee, so I'm back on that train of paying a monthly fee, which is not good because I'm unemployed. But yeah. Here's where Terra excels. Incredible graphics engine. Just gorgeous. And so the corollary to that is that all the wonderful gear that you get, all the loots, your fat loots, look spectacular on your character model. And so that's the wonderful carrot on a stick in MMO. That, I want that fat loot to look so sweet on my dude. And the fact that it does look really cool and the mounts are awesome and each new area that you go into is awesome really propels me through that world. I love the exploring each new area because they all look so visually interesting. And the combat system is the most fun combat system in an MMO, period. End of story. You're playing an action game, and I play it on a controller hooked to my PC, and I'm playing a action game with combos, and it is so much fun. Here's the problem, that we are now in a post-Guild Wars 2 world, where Guild Wars 2 introduced such brilliant refinements to the MMO formula that going back to any game that doesn't have them is really difficult.
I was going to ask you how you wound up back in Terra and not Guild Wars 2.
Terra is more fun from a combat perspective and from a gear perspective. The gear that you get in Guild Wars is just not exciting. It just isn't. And that's really the juice, to use my oft-used word this episode, of playing an MMO for me, is I want that cool new stuff for my guy that keeps me moving. It keeps me energized. It keeps me active. Sure. And the combat system, the thing you're doing most often in Guild Wars 2, just doesn't hold a candle to the fun action combat of Terra. I really dig the action combat. But Guild Wars 2 introduced such wonderful ideas. For example, you will never encounter a problem questing with your friend who is a different level from you in Guild Wars, ever. Ever. And that's a huge deal when you want to play with your friends and your buddy gets on, like buddy like Alex Albrecht, who fucking plays all day long and out-levels you. And then you want to get on and play with him and he's like, you know, five levels higher than you. And now you literally can't go into instances with him because the game says, he's out-leveled you. He can't go into that instance anymore or whatever. Or you just can't even he can't pick up a quest because it's gray to him, etc., etc. Guild Wars 2 eliminated that problem. You are always appropriate to the level of the area you're in. Period. Done. You can quest with anybody you want because the game auto-adjusts your level in relation to where you are and who you're with.
Wait, so does that mean that like the more powerful of the two characters is just going to be, you know, wailing through dudes while you have a average time with it, or
no, that's it's quite the opposite. It's he's not he is only
one or two levels more powerful than the area he's in.
Oh, so he's...
So he's... Even though you... In another MMO, if you're a level 30 and you're in a level 15 area dealing with level 15 mobs,
right.
you just one-hit kill everybody and walk through and your buddy's like, oh, can I hang out with you?
Right.
In Guild Wars 2, you go to level 30 or you go to level 15 area, you're level 30, you're level 16 or 17.
Okay, so you get downscaled.
Yeah, you're all your skills, all your hit points, everything is appropriate to the level that you're in. Just for that time you're there. Then when you walk, I mean, you're still a level 30. It's just on the fly, making you feel it's so you can experience all the content all the time.
But then isn't he the one though doing all the heavy lifting? How what enjoyment are you getting out of it if it's geared to him and you're five?
No. It's geared to whoever. It's geared to you. Or if you're level 15 and you're in the level 15 area and your level 30 buddy comes and helps you out, he's only a level 16.
Oh, I gotcha.
So it. And if you're a level 15 and you go to a level 5 area, then you're like a level 6. It doesn't actually change your level. It just makes it so that while you're in that area, you're not overpowered anymore. So you can quest with whoever you want. Brilliant. Also, the way you get quests in that game, it's just so much better to wander into an area. You're always moving forward. You're always exploring first and worrying about whether you picked up the quest second. Guild Wars 2 has so many smart ideas.
And no monthly fee.
And no monthly fee.
Yeah, which is a big deal.
Major. So, but I love Terra, and I'm so back in and having a great time. And this is like the perfect time of year for me to be in an MMO. I just love sitting around during the holidays with my buddies on Skype playing an MMO. It's great fun. And
yeah, and you know I'm uber jealous, but here's the problem. You chose Terra. And I started a character in Terra. I think I even started on you guys' server, but...
Well, all the servers got merged anyway. Oh,
So we'd be on the same server, but suffice it to say, the problem's going to be...
It's got the... If
you're
Guild Wars 2...
several levels past me, so it's like it's almost pointless. Because what happened is I buy a subscription for another month or two, and then I'll go and I'll play a couple times, and you guys will be on and be like, oh, we're over here. Okay, well, I'll get there one day, and...
That's the thing. Like, all these MMOs have to steal from Guild Wars 2 and adopt that thing where it doesn't matter what your level is... relative to your partner, it matters. It is only relative to where you are, which is so much smarter.
Yeah, because in a single player role playing game, you control the pace of progress for your character. But in a massively multiplayer game, there's all kinds of progressions going on. And while you want to offer the player different varied challenges, you need to allow them to play together because the richness of the game comes from playing with your friends, not from taking on the challenges in the game that you may have to do over and over. I mean,
that's
the reason we make fun of like the go kill five rats, because the go kill five X or go bring back seven thats gets really old. The fun of it is doing it with your friends. So rather than scaling the go get this and bring this back things, make it to where it's not scaled and make it where you scale the characters so they can play together. Makes sense.
Yes.
Makes no sense.
But I love me some Terra, dude. It's great.
You know what you could also do? You could finish Lost Odyssey.
Did you do that?
I finished it. I finished Lost Odyssey.
How much grinding did you have to do to finish Lost Odyssey?
Actually, when I went over the cliff and started grinding, I grinded out way further than I needed to. I went to this temple.
So you were overpowered?
I wasn't. Yeah.
You're all, I'm not coming the fuck back here. You're like, I'm going to make sure I'm level appropriate.
I thought I needed to go further because the last few fights I had leading up to the final confrontation had a lot of guys who had that sort of old school Japanese role playing game mentality of, oh, there's got to be a wipeout move that comes every five or six cycles in combat. Mm-hmm. And my guys were having a real tough time weathering those. So I was like, okay, if that's these sub bosses sort of kill everybody move, then surely the big boss is going to be like 2x that. So
I don't call me Shirley, first of all. But I think that the sort of kill everybody and you have to have the right resistances up thing is such an antiquated concept.
It is. But it's been part of those games for a long time. But anyway, I went out and ground. And then when I got to the final confrontation, I didn't waltz through it, but I got through it pretty easily.
Yeah.
I got through it pretty easily.
Did you like the end?
The end is... Yeah, it's fun. It's hilarious. I thought the payoff was going to be a little bigger. There were a couple of things that were funny about it. It has a wedding.
Oh, that's nice. There's a funeral at the beginning and a wedding at the end. So now, it's nice.
Now I played through two Japanese games that ended with weird weird weddings. Metal Gear and Lost Odyssey. Like, unexpected weddings. Like, weddings, highly underrated end scene is a wedding.
That's another Japanese game, right? Unexpected weddings.
Yes.
Unexpected weddings.
Unexpected weddings.
So there's that. Before we let you go, by the way, Jeff has to get out of here shortly. So
yeah.
We have to get through anything else we wanted to. One thing I wanted to bring up, because it's coming up next week as we start to talk about these things, I think that we should, if we're going to, I think we should actually stick behind what we talked about. And if we're going to do game of the year, like a big deal, hold that conversation till, I don't know, January, February sometime. Like,
that's not going to happen. You know that.
Yeah,
we're having all the people in the world here next week.
So I think what we should do.
And they all were going to want to talk about that.
Sure. And we should do that. And I thought there were some really good suggestions. And I really like this one that Sagatron, S-A-G-A-T-R-O-N, said, your goal is to get to the Weekend Warrior Award. That's not bad. For the most fun game of 2012. To achieve this goal. Now, this is good. This is where I would be good for the show. Bring to the table your top three games you personally had the most fun with in the following categories. Single player mode confirmed. I like the way they put confirmed on the end. Multiplayer mode confirmed. Co-op mode confirmed. Always online confirmed and mobile.
That's the one I don't understand.
Always online. I don't get always online either.
Anyway.
That's not a bad idea.
And it's not
also
a bad idea.
Also like shapes up to have like some debate conversation, you know, back and forth. That's kind of cool. Captain Box also said that he'd like to hear and see our individual lists rather than amalgamated lists, because that's what's important to him. You know, he wants to know what games Jeff Canada loved playing this year and what Garnet loved and what Jeff Mattis loved. For me, that specifically is important because having listened to the show, I know where their tastes overlap. And so for instance, he says that's not very nice. This is when Jeff Kanata talks about an MMO, my eyes glaze over.
Oh, it's like the last 20 minutes that I was doing that. Yeah.
But when he talks about Dishonored.
You're welcome, eyes.
He talks about Dishonored and Diablo 3. I'm keen to hear his opinion.
Glazing is good, right, guys?
And I want to know what
it might be the weed,
crazy
too.
Indie games Jeff Mattis loved. Anyway, I like this idea of maybe like this thing that we do coming up being more like, you know, personalized thing.
Personal favorites.
Yeah, like personal favorites. And then if we want to do like a big game of the year thing, we can. I don't even know. Like, I actually wrote a little editorial for the opening of the next issue of GameCube about how, like, I don't know, like,
I think you're stressing about it too much, man.
I am.
It's just supposed to be fun.
It should be fun.
It's supposed to be, like, this fun thing of, like, what's the game you love the most?
And then you take those games and you throw them in an arena until there's a bloody mess and
exactly.
One left standing.
Yeah. That's fun. I have to say one quick thing before I leave. Thank you to everybody that offered me Dota 2 keys. Got a ton of offers and actually got somebody gifted me Dota 2 on Steam, and I've got it. I'm ready to jump in. I literally started it up this week, turned it on, went to the Learn tab. By the way, front end on that game, gorgeous. Super amazing. Went to the Learn tab and went to characters, and does everybody realize how many fucking characters are in that game?
That's why I'm not.
It was a shock to me.
It's the only reason I'm not playing that.
I was like,
right. Right.
It's like, welcome
and
homework.
Did you start learning?
Yeah, briefly. And I'm a little intimidated, but I'm gonna try it.
You sound like you're in a Bugs Bunny conversation.
I'm gonna try it.
And what else are you gonna be playing between now and next week?
More Terra. Lots more Terra. And more Guardians of Middle Earth. Really still digging that game too.
I have yet to install that. All right. We will take a quick break. When we come back, we will wrap up the Weekend Confirmed.
I feel like we should read some beat poetry now.
All right, dude.
Mellow.
Bust it out.
Yes. I don't actually know really what we're going to talk about for the last segment here. I've got a bunch of like loose threads to start off on. One of the big games that people have been talking a ton about has been Hotline Miami.
Yes.
Have either of you tried it out?
I have.
That's on one of my list of Hotline Miami and FTL are two that.
Okay, FTL, I wholeheartedly 100% endorse. It is fantastic, amazical. And especially for someone who enjoys Diablo-like games, you'll really get off on it because it combines this cool sci-fi Starship Commander vibe with a Diablo sort of play mechanic. So FTL, super highly recommended.
Yeah, it's ridiculously good.
Really, really fun. Really, yeah. Really fun. Hotline Miami.
Yeah.
I didn't really know what to expect going into it.
And I've been playing it, and I still don't know what to expect from it. I mean, I kind of do at this point, but it's...
Did you play Grand Theft Auto 1 or 2?
Yeah.
I kind of thought it was going to be like that, but it's not really like that.
No.
But it sort of looks like that at first.
Well, and it is kind of similar in that the top-down action is, like, super fast and brutal, and it's really easy to die, you know, like the original Grand Theft Auto is. But honestly, like, I mean, I understand why people are excited about it, but it kind of surprised
me. Explain to me why people are excited about it and what your perception is. Because I'm also curious what John thinks to expect from Hotline Miami.
It's like the pop culture, ultra-violent, like, you know, the stuff that we saw in the marketing materials or the screenshots and stuff they were releasing before the game came out. It's like supposed to be this really sort of, you know, odd, off-kilter, ultra-violent, like psychedelic storyline and stuff. And that is usually enough to go, okay, I'll check it out. And... you know, I've had fun with it for an hour or two, but it's I'm sort of at a loss as to why what about it is exactly, you know, people think is like so ridiculously special. It's not bad, but I just don't. I mean, other than the aesthetics, I don't know what sort of.
What type of game is it? Is it an adventure? Is it,
no, it's a top down shooter. So they basically put you in these. It's a top down, and they put you in these, you know, locations, rooms, and there is sort of this weird story that you can try to make sense of, but really it's just like, okay, you're in a location, there's a whole bunch of guys in here, kill everyone and get out of the building. And
so that's one thing right off the bat that was differentiating it for me from Grand Theft is that it is mission level based. Like it's like there's a little bit of openness to it where it's not a traditional, you know, old school game, here's your 4x3 screen and get through this obstacle course. But it is, here is a small confined area, get in, do something and get back out. And it is very much like someone equated it in one of the forums to being like somewhat like Super Meat Boy in that regard.
It's like,
and that sort of makes sense.
Beyond Castle Wolfenstein from like the old Apple IIe days, if you combined it with Super Meat Boy and like, you know, methamphetamine or something. It's, I mean, like it is. I mean, I can see that comparison, that hard sort of like, oh my God, this, because the bad guys move really fast and they're really like, they get you in their sights, you're dead. It's like a one shot kind of thing. So it's really all about, you know, moving your character around the environment and utilizing the crazy weapons that they give you to, you know, basically wipe everyone out. But
trades a ton on the 16-bit. Retro styled graphics, saturated with the sort of, as Jeff put it accurately, like a methamphetamine high kind of look to it, like a lot of green and pink oversaturation, you know, the seepy yellow color, like to give it like that crazy, like, oh man, I'm totally tweaking.
Yeah.
And then
you kill a bunch of guys. I mean, it's really violent. Yeah.
Is it from like the Deco Miami type feel? As far as look, or?
I think there was some attempt to do that, and I think there was also it definitely visually channels the original Grand Theft Auto games in that you're running around, you have that same sort of like dude is an oval with a circle in the minute, you know, you see his shoulders and head from the top down perspective, and he swings the bat overhand, he has a gun, he pulls it up, and you see that, you know, poking out in front, and it's done now with a little sophistication, and it's a twin stick control, so, you know, you use your right stick to aim and you use your left stick to move around, and so it has a little fidelity there, and it's very big into, you know, finishing moves, so you like go over and you like smack someone and then you like jump down on top of them and beat the blood out of them.
Right. Yeah. It really trades up on, like, aesthetically, I really like it. And the ultraviolet stuff, I think, works with what they're trying to do. I'm not far enough into it to, Or maybe that's what it is. You know, like I'm sort of waiting for that. Like, okay, where's this thing that people are so excited about?
Well, I think the thing people do get out of it is the pace is fast.
Yeah.
It's platformy in its approach of level after level after level. And it is hyper real, not hyper real, but like, you know, like you said, the way we describe the visuals is also the way it approaches everything. Like it is the old Grand Theft Auto with the regard to taking everything over the top, being super violent, being super colorful, being crazy. And like, even your character is just like totally irreverent. Just,
yeah. And like I said, I think what they made is entertaining in its own right. I guess what I was saying is I've heard it talked about in some Game of the Year conversations, and that's the part that I don't kind of get, I guess.
Well, I mean, if you really like the retro thing or whatever,
yeah.
Here's the deal is, and I already said this, you know, on Twitter, is that I've tried it once. I may go back to it again, but it didn't click for me. I got the running around and smacking people, and I thought that the mechanic of being inside the various buildings that you're in and figuring out, you know, taking a little chance to look at like, oh, this guy's got a gun and he's walking on this pattern. These two guys over here are thugs and they got knives, right, and they're on this pattern. And you can like, it's very much a pick up and use whatever's at your hand at the moment and then fling it and get the next weapon and then fling it and get the next weapon and grab a gun and fire the 10 bullets that are on in it and then move on to the next thing. So it's like a very hand-to-mouth sort of action, chew through stuff. And in that regard, it's cool because as you get to each new lock, so to say, of progression,
right,
you have to figure out, oh, what do I have in my hands? What can I use right here? How do I have to approach this situation? And I think that's why people like it, is because it like breaks it all down into a quick action platform-like experience, but then it has like this cool retro styling around it.
Oh, and that's fair. And I do get that. I mean, like, I understand that. I just, you know, when you're talking about all the other games that are in the Game of the Year running this year, I don't know. Maybe it's just not my, maybe just the same thing as for you is it didn't click for me. So I'm just like,
I mean, meh. that's kind of what I was expecting from everything I've read and everything I've seen. It doesn't strike me as it's going to be my cup of tea, but just doing my due diligence, something I'm going to have to try. But
I like how you call it your due diligence. I'm sorry, I have to play this game.
Well,
now.
Yeah,
I mean,
eat your lima beans, John.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's you know, I want to be able to talk about it, and a couple of people have asked, you know, my opinion on it, so. It's something I'm going to try. I'm just not sure if it's going to be something I'm going to be interested in or stick with it for any length of time.
Yeah, I'm not super. I guess that's the other thing is like with all the other stuff I've been playing, I'm just not super inspired to go back to it. So
yeah.
Sorry to disappoint you, Hotline Miami fans, of which I know there are several of you.
Because you are legion.
You are legion. It's been, and obviously it's been popular, and so I've got nothing. I'm not knocking it, you know, for not. I think that's the thing that's interesting to me is that I appreciate what it's doing.
Yeah.
And I get that. It's just, it's not super clicking with me. It goes back to that thing I was talking earlier about with shooters. It's like, I sort of am just not really drawn to play multiplayer online shooters right now. I'm not really sure why.
Right.
I always have. Maybe I've just played too many of them, or I don't know.
No,
I don't really answer that question.
No, I know what you're feeling, though. I mean, I kind of fell off the multiplayer shooter train a while ago, and it was just, a lot of it was just because of the hours you got to put in to be competitive. You know, like if you want to be good at Halo and you want to be good at Call of Duty and you want to be like, I mean, play hours and hours and hours and compete and go for leaderboard, mm-hmm, you know, accolades and stuff. It's like a, you know, any e-sport, you know, when I was playing Counter-Strike back in the day, the only reason I was any good was because I was playing a lot.
Yeah. You know? I mean, when back in the very, very early days of World of Warcraft, when they had the, PvP and you actually had to skill up in ranks, very early days, what was vanilla WoW. You had to put in a ton of time, and I put in way too much time for it, and I just have not really been into multiplayer ever since.
That's fair. What are you guys looking forward to playing over the holiday? Everyone gets to catch up on stuff over the holiday.
Jeez, I've still got to play Assassin's Creed 3. I'm just now starting XCOM, and having a ton of fun with that. I want to finish off The Walking Dead. What else was on my list of things that I needed to finish? But I have like several games that I, you know, want to finish. So that
long do you think you'll stay with Baldur's Gate? Because I think that's the interesting thing about Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition. Jeff picked it up.
Yep.
You have picked it up. Jeff also. Jeff Cannata picked it up. Jeff Mattis has it. John, you've got it as well. I loved Baldur's Gate, and the nostalgia side of me says, oh, I'd love to go back to that. But then, you know, the pragmatist kicks in and says, man, I'm playing a lot of other games, and I know what a time commitment it was to play Baldur's Gate. And having done it before, I don't know that I would get that much, like, back to that that earlier discussion we had about, like, you know, the fun of playing just to be playing.
Right.
I don't know how much fun of playing just to be playing I'd have, because I'd be like, oh, I know what's coming. I want to get to that, too.
Well, it's the type of game where, I mean, I played through all the new content. I played through the Black Pits, and I've played through trying to find the new characters and at least get a little bit of what their storyline is. And it definitely is, you know, if people are expecting a totally new experience, they're going to be disappointed. But it's definitely Baldur's Gate. It is an enhanced version of Baldur's Gate, and it's a great nostalgia piece. As far as playing through it again, it's something I'd have to sit down and you know, dedicate the time to it. It's kind of like, you know, playing through BioShock again or playing through, you know, the original Mass Effect. You know, it's just something that you have to sit down and do and want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I've got plenty of other games that I need to focus on to, you know, talk about Game of the Year. And
that's going
to
be a big thing, obviously.
So you're playing on PC, right?
Yeah.
So I picked up the iOS version.
I was watching you play it on your iPad.
And that actually is, you know, if you check out some reviews and stuff online, you'll see people complaining about some of the controls, some of the touch stuff is a little fiddly. Like, they can probably do a little bit better job with that, like patch it or whatever. But it is extraordinarily cool to have such a massive classic RPG in a, you know, portable format that you can sort of take with you. To that, on that note, I probably wouldn't play through the whole thing again had I purchased the PC version. Part of it, the appeal is the portability.
Like, well, how much of that, though, is the novelty of it being iPad? Because DS and PSP and Vita have had massive RPGs on them for ages. And it's not like that has been like the saving grace, well, at least not for PlayStation's portable side.
Oh, it's probably not the best, you know, portable RPG out there. I'm sure that, you know, there's
what I'm saying. So it's a lot of it's the novelty effect of, oh, look, I have it on my iPad.
Well, there's also the benefit, though, that if you have it on your iPad and you have it on your PC, they're cross-compatible. So you can actually play, you know, co-op with or multiplayer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. With somebody who's playing on an iPad, you can also do it with PC.
Can I cross-save that way also?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, so that's cool. So I can pick up on my iPad and play. All right, now that suddenly just changed the tables entirely on my interest level, because that's really smart.
Yeah, I mean, it is an old school, over, you know, really sort of archaic in a lot of ways, but it is Baldur's Gate, and it's still really fun. It's really difficult. It's as unforgiving as ever, but having it portable is a really big selling point for me. Like that, I mean, $10 to be able to take that wherever I go.
Yeah, I mean, if I had an iPad that I could play it with me, it'd be great to, you know, I could have had a blast with it on the plane coming out here. So it's definitely, but it is totally a nostalgia thing. It's whether you really want to take the time to play through something that you have very, very fond memories of.
Well, I just started Persona 4, so I can definitely understand the like the value of playing games. But of course, Persona 4 has been reworked in HD, well, in widescreen support for the Vita, and added some additional material. But it is a several year old PS2 RPG brought forward to the Vita.
It's called a P4 Golden Showers now, right? Or something.
Yes. Go, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well done.
Well done.
And I'm not going to get too deep into it because, for one thing, I want to talk about when Kanata's here because I want to get him interested in it because he said he started playing it once. But I have not been drawn into playing a big RPG experience on handhelds before. And the reason being that if I have if I'm going to play a big RPG, I usually think, oh, I want to play it in a relatively large chunk of time. If I'm playing in a relatively large chunk of time, I'm usually able to be at home where I would have my computer or my home entertainment system. Yeah, so why would I want to play on my small screen? So one thing that I found that's really cool about the Vita implementation, and maybe this is why they specifically didn't – no, that doesn't make any sense. It wouldn't be why they didn't do a PS3 edition. I actually wish I could play on my PS3 too, because then I could sit down in front of the television and move it. But it is really nice to take the thing to bed and lay in bed and play like the last 20 or 30 minutes before going to bed. And it's because like Persona 4 – And I apologize, Persona fans who to whom this is going to be like training wheels, Persona baby steps. The immediate thing that struck me about this game that's so cool is that it gets character development and it gets storytelling, even if it is, you know, to some people's minds, you know, an anime story, which they might put down. I love anime, so that's actually right in the wheelhouse for me.
It's well written.
The characters, like, there's something about RPGs where a lot of times when you go to talk to characters, they're trying so hard to tell you that this character you're talking to is the strong, you know, strong-willed but soft, kind-hearted person. And this one is the devious person. They don't actually do that with this. They just have them having these conversations and talking and introducing through natural life. And yet within, you know, I played like 2 hours and 8 minutes and I feel like I already know the characters I've interacted with and I've had interesting stories. And the weird thing is like my existence through the first 2 hours of the game, pardon these spoilers. If you're really going to go play it and you really are worried about it, then, you know, you can stop for a moment.
It's been out for a while on PS2.
It's been out for a while.
Yeah,
is that my character moved to a new town, went to his first few days of high school, saw some crazy shit in the neighborhood and on TV, and has had some kind of supernatural experiences.
Yeah. It's great.
Haven't really fought anybody. Haven't had any traditional combat. I've had a bunch of conversations. Have learned that there's a very, very evil supermarket in town that wants to sell me everything all the time and is brainwashing people to sing their song.
Now, have you played with Persona either 3 or 4 combat at all?
No.
Oh, you are in for a...
Yeah, I know. Like, so people have been telling me for years that I should be playing Persona.
It is really good, and it almost erring on a little too deep. And like in terms of the number of combinations you can make and the number of things you can do, but
it gets like very collectathon with the personas.
Yeah, it's like a sort of like a card collecting game, and then you're mixing and matching cards and building new persona, and that's all really cool because you're like, oh, I combine these two cards, I end up with another badass persona, or
I think I'm
very
good with that.
Very 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 cool system, very deep. Like you might end up consulting a FAQ or two.
I mean, let's make no mistake, the game is absolutely very much something that someone who is into Japanese culture and Japanese gaming will totally groove on, and someone who's not is going to be like, that's what I don't like about those games. I mean, that's fine. It's fine. It's not for you then. But if you are into that, it hits on all the notes so well. The characters, the music is superlative. I'm so dumb. I don't know why I'm so dumb sometimes. Somehow I got in my head that this game was only being released digitally. So when it hit PS Network, I bought it right away. I was, you know, like, look, you get busy, you don't pay attention to things. I didn't realize there was like this awesome edition that Amazon had that was like a real version with extra stuff. So I bought the digital download version, which was like $40 off of PlayStation Network. And come to find out, I could have gotten a better deal and had it on chip. Anyway, I'm just
damn you, special deals.
I'm stupid.
Wow.
Anyway, you should get it if you're into that. And I'm really looking forward to talking about it in the coming weeks, because that's one of the games now that I have basically the rest of the year off. I have 2 weeks off. That's nice.
That's the best JRPG that I never finished. So I have the PS2 version. Might go back.
I forced myself to finish Lost Odyssey before going to this. Because I was like,
you never would have gone back.
Yeah, I never would have gone back, obviously. And I was so close to finishing Lost Odyssey. I'm like, okay, you know what? I want that payoff. I mean, that's the whole thing about that conversation line for me is that, yeah, the fun of playing an RPG is all of the buildup and the journey. That doesn't mean that you don't want the payoff, because the fun of having that fun of that buildup is then getting to the point where you get to see what it was all for. Yeah. What was it all worth? Why was I doing all this buildup, right?
Plus, weddings at the end. Hello.
I know, right? I can't wait to play with the relationships. And it's like, it's so weird that like, you, like, I am literally excited about going to high school.
Yeah.
And like,
developing your social links.
Social links, hanging out after school, and going home and seeing my niece who's going to make dinner for us.
So did you join like a sports team or the debate club or
anything? Not yet.
Okay. So you're still – okay. I won't – you have a lot of choices.
It's not spoiler.
Looking forward to it. You know, the other, so as we're kind of wrapping up here, I've been thinking about games that I want to play before the end of the year, because we're going to have our big game of the year discussion. You know, one that's been sorely overlooked, I think, because I've been going back and looking at, you know, reviews and commentary and opinion and message boards and that kind of stuff. Max Payne 3, I think, was a much better game than it got credit for.
We were just talking about this.
I don't understand how it got overlooked like this, because I'm looking at that and now I'm thinking to myself, you know, before we sit down and have this big Shaq News Game of the Year discussion, I'm going to play through Max Payne 3.
You should. It's really good. I mean, it's a shooter. It is what you expect from Max Payne. And I was actually surprised at how good the narrative was. It's very dark. It's very morose and noir and, like, you know, Max is the guy that gets riddled with bullets and is like, well, I guess I got to go kill 100 more dudes. You know, he's still that guy. It's still very – but presentationally, they did a lot of stuff. You might want to keep an eye on, too. I guess they are taking a lot of the lessons they learned from the really stylized sort of Michael Mann, you know, presentational filters and weird sort of like Tony Scott-ish stuff that they do. And they're applying some of that to GTA 5. From a presentational perspective, which hasn't really been shown off much in the trailers, so I don't know what they're doing, but yeah, pretty cool.
All right. What are you going to be playing? The other things, let's see, what else? Ariel and I finished up the second of three Resident Evil 6 campaigns. We finished up Jake and Sherry Birkin.
Oh, nice.
And that was a little anticlimactic, so we still have Chris and... I forget who Chris is with, but we got that one and then ate it after all that. But the patch is almost out to make Resident Evil 6 a good game. Remember, it comes out on the 18th.
Oh, the fun patch.
The fun patch.
Yeah, fun
which,
one.
Which, like, gives you the improved room, you know, camera where you're going to be able to see more and not feel like you're, like, just right up on dude's shoulder every time you're playing.
Yeah, just generally remove some of the suckage.
And we played some of the Zombie U multiplayer mode.
Oh,
which is, it's really, really, really cool. It absolutely requires a pro controller. You can play it with Nunchuck and Wiimote, but you don't have enough fidelity in the controls to be competitive. But the way it works is that one person has the pad and is like the king of zombies and is playing like a mini strategy game, like dropping different zombie types sort of in the vein of a tactical shooter layout game. So you have like different combatant classes for the zombies. Like some are stand in place and protect area and some are hunters, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
And then the other person is running around as a survivor, trying to, in one mode, do like a capture the flag thing, and in the other mode, it's just like survive how long you can. And it's really interesting. Two player in the same room co-op, but one person holding the pad and one person playing on the TV screen. So it's a really...
Oh, that's interesting.
Like that's an interesting... You know, one of the things Jeff said about Wii U was that Zombie U, which he didn't like because it's bothered him so much because it got him so nuts, but he was worried whether or not people would be able to find ways to duplicate using the system well, because what Zombie U does is it forces you to use the pad in... You know, you can be under attack, right, but you have to use the pad to look down into your backpack to get stuff at critical moments.
Yeah, it's not just a map like a lot of these other games are doing.
Well, here's another way to use it. Here's a way where, you know, one person's playing multiplayer with the pad and doing one sort of gameplay, and one other person's playing on the screen and doing another sort. So I don't know, it's kind of cool. And pro controllers are a ripoff, by the way.
Are they?
$50.
Aye.
And impossible to find. But wow. You know what? Actually, it's not really a ripoff, because that's what controllers for all systems cost. And it made me like do another double take again. Like, I haven't had to buy controllers in a long time because there hasn't been a new system in a long time. But I forgot like how bad they get. Like, how can an Xbox cost $200, but an Xbox controller is $50?
I would venture to say that they're gouging a little bit.
It's where the real money of the movie's made.
Yeah.
Merchandising.
Yeah. Popcorn. Yep.
Anyway. Let's do closing thoughts.
Okay.
Or deep thoughts. Or
finishing moves.
Ho, ho, ho. Christmas finishing moves.
Nice. Thank
you.
That's
awesome.
Thank you very much, Adrian, in the United Kingdom, for the awesome custom Christmas finishing move with a big drop.
Twas dope.
Twas dope, yo.
That's awesome.
Who would like to start?
I'll start.
All right, Jeff.
Oh, fine. Go ahead.
Oh,
bring it.
Okay. So, really quick one. Another little indie iOS title that I've been playing called Arranger. And it is really, really fun. It's... you basically play a little cube-like character who is a musical arranger, and it is an RPG that is littered with all these really weird mini-games, 8-bit art style. so esoteric that it's, you know, tough to discern what the actual story is. But most of the games that you end up playing and interacting with other citizens and stuff are these little mini games about, you know, you enter people's dreams and play certain songs to make them feel better, or you it's crazy. It's great. It's a buck. A ranger.
Rad. Like it. John Kiever.
Well, I made the totally bad mistake of starting two games that I really want to finish at the same time.
It's a killer.
Yeah, I know. I started playing The Walking Dead before I came out here to California. And Steve, who reviewed the game for us, said, hey, hold off on episodes 4 and 5 until you can just, you know, because they're really...
Yeah, you'll
really
want to pull through.
So I said, okay, I'm not going to finish them up. So the night before I'm getting ready to hop on the plane, I said, okay, I've got a little bit of extra time. I just want something to wind down. I boot up XCOM.
Yes.
So,
genius.
Yeah, that was, you know, the one more turn of XCOM and everything like that. And I'm just, I'm just like totally can't wait to get home now to start.
Pro tip, do not try to cure insomnia with XCOM.
Yeah.
Not really a good choice.
Yeah.
Not
so,
really a good choice.
So that was my stupid finishing move of trying to, put two games together that I probably shouldn't have.
Oh, well. Walking Dead finishing XCOM.
You'll get through it. Yeah. I'm sure.
Let's see. So for mine, I just want to say thank you to everyone who has been so supportive of Rider Rumble. And by that, I mean you bought the damn game, which is awesome. We've been excited about it. Gion and Chris at Feel Every Yummy have really been energized by the response. And they've been working their asses off on the multiplayer side of it. So obviously, we know that there were some connections struggles. Actually, we've had really good luck with it, but we've heard a lot out there that there have been some connection struggles. Everything that we can do that's not related to connectivity, we've been doing. The guys have done about 4 updates to the server and the server optimization side of it. But crossing fingers, we should have a multiplayer addressing update out for you before the holidays as well. So fear not, we are working our asses off to make that as good a game as possible. And then we should have some more stuff to announce after the beginning of the year with regard to, you know, other writers and things. It's stuff. Exciting. It's really tough, man. Let me tell you what, coming back and getting right back into work on a patch or update, whatever you want to call it, is a ton of work. So
yeah, it's no joke.
Fire. Love it. Bring in the fire. Hey, next week, we have a great show for you. Hope you are excited for it. We will have a ton of guests. It'll be the look back at 2012. I'm going to steer it that way as opposed to Game of the Year. But we have a ton of games to talk about and absolutely want to get your involvement in it. So I'd love to know what your top Game of the Year was. You can break it down however you want to break it down. But do also include some personal stories. Tell me what you liked about it. Tell me a great experience that you had in the game, whether it was, you know, something that happened online or something that crazy that happened in the game, multiplayer, co-op, single player. Give us your stories. Love to share those as we go into the holidays. And of course, didn't really work out over Thanksgiving. We would love to have some holiday stories as well. We can have those for this week and next week. Or I'm sorry, this coming week and the week after, because the week after we're also recording this coming week, and yes, that'll be the look forward show into 2013. And for that one, love to hear about like what you're excited about, what you're interested in, what you'd like to hear us talk about. I think that we will probably, by necessity, talk a little bit about the upcoming machines that are rumored to be coming. But, you know, there's so many great games to talk about that I don't know that there is much served by speculation on that front. I'd rather talk about all the cool games that are coming, and especially in that first quarter.
Yeah. Too many things we do know about.
That's true.
Yes. And on all that note, we will draw this show to a close. Thanks to John, who's here for our holiday party and out from Florida, a long trip. Can't wait to get back to XCOM, though.
Yes, definitely.
And inside the booth, Brooklyn here, taking care of the business on the boards. Ryan and Del Rio in there as well, keeping us on track. Thanks to everybody here also at Atlantis Group Studio. Hope Jeff Cannata had an excellent audition where he is off at right now. Thanks very much. That's your Weekend Confirmed, and the tailgate is next, but otherwise, we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, boy.
bartender, hear me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready.
This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Gamefly's not-so-scary end-of-the-world PC sale, where the only thing you need to worry about is saving your hard-earned cash. Go to www.gamefly.com/download-games to see what's on sale today.
Surprise, we actually snuck in the tailgate with Kanata.
I'm back, bitches.
All right. I don't even know why I'm still doing this after last week. Now I went 1-2. I'm thoroughly alone in the cellar.
Too. I'm 1-2 as well.
But I'm thoroughly in the cellar. I'm at 18-23 for the season. You are still at 21-20.
Del Rio's running away with it.
Del Rio is running away with it. Although Andrea and our guests both went 3-0 last week. That puts Andrea in second at 22-19 and our guests at 21-20. No pressure, John. You just have to do well today. So, oh my God! Finally, an awesome slate of weekend football games. This weekend has some killer games.
Can I go off on a tiny little rant here, real fast? Because as much as I want to give props to Del Rio and his Seattle Seahawks, I just want to say for the record, Pete Carroll's a douchebag. That guy is a fucking douchebag. I've thought that
really
for a long time, and I'm finally saying it. What an ass, right? 58-0 and fucking still throwing into the end zone. What an asshole. And how many years ago was it where he runs up to Harbaugh and is like, what's your deal, man? And his fucking team gets it done to him. And he's such an ass, fucking runs out of town on USC when everybody gets suspension and he just goes and fucking cashes the checks when it was under his watch that they broke all the fucking rules. What an asshole. All right, I'm back.
Wow. Del Rio's all go Hawks. All right,
that's
then.
A douche.
By the way, could you talk to your Niners about Vernon Davis?
Throw the ball to him?
Yeah. And also, by the way, Kaepernick, not really that good a pro quarterback.
Man, I'm sticking with him.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. Like, way to ruin a season. But that's okay. You'll get to pick that game last because that's the Monday night tilt. We're going to start off with the New York football Giants going into Atlanta to face the Falcons, and there is a huge, like, brouhaha now between the wide receiver cores for each team, like, calling each other out, talking some mad shit.
That's fun, though. Like, it's a time of year for that.
It is. So, you know, the Falcons obviously talking some mad smack, and why, the Giants just saying rings.
Yeah.
We got the rings. So, the Giants, though, getting 1.5 points going into Atlanta. Dave, you have to pick first on all three this week because you are in the first spot. So, Dave, who are you going with? He is going with the Giants this week. Brooklyn's on the engineer duty, and we know she knows how to pick some games. She is going with the Falcons at home. Jeff Mattis.
I'm going with Atlanta on this.
He likes the Falcons at home.
Falcons.
Also, for Kiefer with the Falcons.
I'm hopping on that bandwagon, too. I'll take the home. They got something to prove. And the Giants are so uneven.
They are very uneven.
I don't know who they are week to week.
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
It's December. G-men gonna roll.
You think?
Yeah. I'm going with the Giants. Don't even need the 1.5, but I'll take it.
All right.
Then we have another big matchup with the Green Bay Packers going into New Soldier Field. Green Bay -3. So Green Bay on the road, a favorite, going into Chicago. I mean, obviously, Chicago's had, you know, some troubles here and there, but still, it's the Chicago Bears. What do you think? Is Cutler playing? Yes, Cutler's playing.
But it doesn't matter. You're going. Packer?
So Del Rio goes Packers.
Yeah, I'm going.
Kanata
Packers
goes
as well.
Packers.
I'm telling you right now, Chicago doesn't even make the playoffs.
Chicago doesn't even make the playoffs. So what? Who makes the Playboys? Who makes the playoffs? The Cowboys?
Maybe.
Oh my Lord!
Wow. Could happen.
Yeah.
They're tanking, dude. Chicago's tanking.
Chicago has hit a rough spell, but nothing cures that like being at home in Soldier Field and playing the Green Bay Packers. Mm. Don't count them short. Bears! The Bears.
Yeah, Packers.
Packers for Kiefer.
Green Bay.
Packers for... and Packers. So it's a Packers all... Look, I'm going to catch up.
You might.
Go Cutler!
You can only hope.
Go Cutler. Then finally, in the Monday night tilt... It's offense versus defense in the beautiful, possibly cold New England, where
who just embarrassed Houston.
Dude, that was ugly.
Unbelievable.
They took the Texans to school.
Brady when he's on his game.
Well, like, but it wasn't just him being on a game. The defense,
yeah,
the New England up. Defense, which has been much maligned, stepped up quite a bit. I mean, yeah, Houston was very predictable. They did not beat around the bush. They were very much like, yes, we are running left. We are running left right now to try and stop us. And New England said, okay, we're not only going to try, we're going to stop you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So San Francisco, though, known for its defense, is getting 5.5 on the road in New England. What do you think, Dave? Patriots 58-0. Suck it, bitch. That's awesome. Well done. Well done. Brooklyn, how about yourself? She likes the Patriots. Also, Jeff Mattis.
I'm a Niner guy. It's just my team.
He's a Niner guy. It's his team. Jeff Cannata, is it your team, too?
You're goddamn right it's my team, too.
It's my team.
Kaepernick has the best game of his career.
Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be saying much.
His four-game career. Mm-hmm. And the Niners own New England. The defense holds Brady to under 200 yards and holds their offense to under 20 points.
I heard
it here first.
All right.
Clearly someone has their medical marijuana card.
Patriots.
Patriots, and I'm on that as well. Got to be the Patriots. Come on, like, even traveling. I'm sorry, I'm not as confident as you guys. But there you go. All right, folks, we are headed into the home stretch. Hope you're having a great season. We will talk to you next week.